Hare Krishna. I have been requested by the devotees who are so dearly worshipped within my heart to speak a message concerning the life of one of the greatest Vaishnavas of the modern world, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. By His loving friendship, kindness, and mercy, He requested me to remain with Him for the last 7.5 weeks of His life on this earth. It was truly amazing. For the weeks that He was in His final stages, tens and thousands of people through internet and other sources were several times a day connecting to hear the reports about His life and His condition. Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, deeply affected people's lives with the impact of awakening a genuine and real yearning for Krishna consciousness. I entitled today's lecture, A Life of Compassion, Dedication, and Love, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. Yesterday, we celebrated the disappearance day of the Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur. We learned how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he broadcast the most important message of this age of Kali, Harinam Sankirtan, the Yuga Dharma, through a person who was born in an outcast, untouchable family by social standards. A person who came from a background which was rejected and suppressed by the Hindu society. But yet Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu claimed that he was the crown jewel of the entire universe. When Haridas Thakur passed from this world, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in ecstatic love, held the body of Haridas in his lap and danced in ecstasy. Personally bathed the body of Haridas Thakur. Personally buried the body of Haridas Thakur. Lord Chaitanya personally begged from the common people to conduct a feast for Haridas Thakur, and glorified him if he had five mouths. Yes, this is the Lord's message to the world. That even those persons who are socially in a very depressed or rejected state can elevate themselves to the highest ultimate perfection and be fit to be spiritual masters of the whole universe if they sincerely take to the process of bhakti and the chanting of the holy names. I'd like to speak something about the background of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaja's race so that we can get an understanding, a better appreciation of his greatness, where he was coming from and what he became. People are interested in hearing stories of rags to riches, success stories of people with nothing who come to the top of their particular fields. We will find this in a most resplendent form in the life of Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj ki. He's coming from the African American race. In America, the African people for centuries were oppressed and persecuted. The first Africans came to America in 1619 when a slave trader from Holland came to the West Indies, and he ran out of food, and he traded about a dozen African people as slaves in exchange for food. And soon this became very popular. At that time, in the colonies of America, one of the best profit-making crops was tobacco, and they needed a lot of workers in the fields. So they were importing Africans from America, to America as slaves. The history is long. It's a fascinating subject. Perhaps the greatest, most obvious sign of hypocrisy of the United States of America. The country was founded on the principle that all men are created equal. These innocent African people, they're villages were raided. They were torn out of their homes, put in concentration camps, forcibly, not paid anything, just literally kidnapped, held as prisoners, put on overcrowded boats, shipped across an ocean, and then sold as slaves. According to statistics, between 12 and 20 million Africans were forcibly ripped out of their homes and sent to America to be slaves between 1619 and 1867. 5% died in the prison camps in Africa. Over 15% died due to overcrowded, inhumane conditions on the boats. And 30% died within the first 3 months of being in America due to inhuman conditions in which they were treated. So approximately 50% died before they were even made into slaves. Whipping, in order to prove who the owner was, they would brand them sometimes on the face with hot iron. They weren't allowed to have their own name. They were given the name of their masters. They had no legal rights whatsoever. They were treated worse than animals. This went on for over 200 years. And then in 1861, America had a civil war. It began in 1861, it ended in 1865. One of the prime reasons for this war is the North wanted to abolish slavery and the South wanted to keep slavery. 3 million men fought in this war. 600,000 Americans were killed. More than World War I, more than World War II, more than any other war, Americans were killing each other. And ultimately, with the victory of the North, in 1865, the 13th Amendment of the Constitution was created, which abolished slavery. Previously, in 1667, slavery became a legal institution throughout America. After 200 years, they finally came to the point of freeing the slaves. But in many cases, this was only an external, superficial, legalistic reality. Because the people, the African American people, were so downtrodden, and they were looked upon as such inferior beings by the white people, that practically all of them were forced to live in the poverty of ghettos. Little food, little sanitation. They were not given the rights to have proper education. Therefore, practically the only jobs they could get, if any, was just hard labor. Especially in the southern states, blacks were not allowed to use the same restrooms as whites. They were not allowed to use the same drinking fountain. They had to go to the back of the buses, and they were never allowed in the same schools. Inferior education. Keep them down. And if they tried to get some rights, they would usually be beaten, tortured, or killed. And factually, this was the way America was until the 1960s. Dr. Martin Luther King studied Mahatma Gandhi in India. Mahatma Gandhi was Dr. Martin Luther King's Shiksha Guru. Because he was a Christian minister, and he believed in nonviolence and peace, and he felt that we cannot overcome the prejudice and the laws and the systems of America by force. So taking the same type of psychology and techniques of Mahatma Gandhi, he began the civil rights movement in America and had great impact tremendous impact. Of course, he was murdered in the process. But many, over the last 50 years, many rights have been given that were never there before. His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Swami was born before the success of Martin Luther King's civil rights movement. He was born in a situation where everything was against him socially. He was born in a violent, poverty-stricken ghetto in Cleveland, Ohio. Freezing cold winters with practically no heat. He was from a broken family. His father left the family before he was even born and never did anything to help them. A single widowed mother had to do everything. Maharaj personally told me that he never had more than two or three sets of clothes at the most. And if a friend would come home whose clothes were more torn than his mother would always give that friend his clothes. Even though she couldn't afford to buy him anything more. Because she wanted to teach her son the spirit of compassion. That it is more important to think in terms of helping others than our own needs. And she lived by that principle her whole life. That had a deep impact in his heart. He was a minority. At that time, the African American people living in the ghettos, the chances were 99.99% that they would live, suffer, and die in the ghetto. It was a very rare hope against hope that they could ever get out and be successful in any field of life. So he was poverty, broken family, minority, persecuted. But that's not all. When he was a young boy, he had a speech defect called stammering, where he could not speak. Sometimes it would take him, he told me, 3 or 4 minutes to speak one word. And when he was a little boy in school, he would be called on to speak. If he was asked to speak, he would try to say, "My house." He'd go, "Ma, ma, 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 ha, 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 ha." And he'd be in so much anxiety, he would be slapping his hand against the desk and stomping his feet, trying to say the word, and all the classmates would be laughing at him and joking against him. Very difficult. He was ridiculed even by his own people. That had a great trauma for a small boy. But at the same time, whenever he would speak from the Bible, the teachings of Lord Jesus Christ, he would never stammer. He could speak eloquently. And his Bible studies teachers took note of this and were amazed. And soon he became a child evangelist. He was preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, even on television and radios. And for years he took classes on speech therapy and little by little gradually overcame his speech defect. It was obvious that he was not born in this world to speak about anything material. He was born in this world to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I will tell you what he personally said about the neighborhood he lived in. It was so violent due to lack of food, lack of law and order, so much suppression and depression. He said people would argue with guns. When he was not even a teenager, the only way he could survive and live amongst his peers was he had to carry a loaded gun with him at all times. His killings and death were an everyday affair. He told me if you could, people would always pick arguments, and if you argued with somebody, it would invariably break out into violence. And if you didn't have a gun, you would probably be shot. If you had a gun, when the argument would meet its peak, you would show your gun, he would show his gun, and then you both realized that one of us are going to die unless we stop arguing. That was life in the ghetto of America. And yet, from his heart of hearts, he was such a humble, compassionate, nonviolent person. But this was the only way to survive. In the ghettos, the best he could get is an inferior education, which practically no proper college would even accept. His name was then John Favors. His mother called him Johnny Boy. He was always so interested in helping others. He became a tutor. And he was giving classes to help other students, both his age and younger than him, to help them in their studies. He really liked to help others. And also he would get paid something very little and be able to help his mother in her hard struggle for existence. How Krishna arranges. Because he was such a genuine person, there was a sangam or like a society where tutors within the Cleveland area would help each other. So he met a Jewish girl, white race, from a very wealthy family. And she understood that this person is such a good-hearted soul. He's so intelligent, so creative. He has so much faith in God. He's so much devoted to whatever he does. He's genuinely good, which is very difficult to find a person like that anywhere. So this girl was thinking that he deserves a chance in life. He has no chance where he's living. So she arranged for the principal of her school, which was the most prestigious prep school for the wealthiest kids in the entire area, for him to go to a summer school. He was the only black person, African person, to ever go to this school. It was in a very wealthy suburb. And during the summer, he performed so well and his characteristics were so attractive that the principal of the school gave him free entrance. And when he graduated from high school at one of the best prep schools of America, the principal told him, "I can get you in any university or college that you want. Just tell me which one and I'll get you in." How is that? Because please understand that this was in the 1960s. This is just after Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson really, really pushed integration of schools for the blacks. I can tell you stories that you would not believe that happened when I was a teenager. The segregation was so strong that just to get an African person in one school, university in Alabama, the governor of the state, the police force of the state, vowed they would never let an African into their colleges. And the President of the United States, John F. Kennedy, and the Attorney General took the domestic army, the National Guard, to fight against the police and the governor. The governor vowed publicly, "We will never allow," and the president said, "This black man is going in your school, or there's going to be a war." Thousands of military, the National Guard, U.S. Army, assembled in Alabama to escort this boy into college. And at the last minute, the government and the local police, they kind of disappeared. This would have been major. That's what it took. That's how the government was pushing. So the government was giving incentives of quotas for universities that would never take black people. "If you take these African people, we will give you government grants and we will give you tax exemptions. If you do not, no government grants and no tax exemptions." So this was big money. And most colleges and universities are actually existing for money. So they, in order to get the government grants and exceptions, they had to accept so many African people. And most of them they had to take out of the very inferior schools of the ghettos. So this principal said, "I have taught you in one of the top white schools of the country. Any college in America would take you as a first choice. Just tell me where you want to go to college." So he applied, and he got scholarships to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Cornell. Any college, he got full scholarship. So he was just looking for which scholarship is the best. They were canvassing so much for him that Princeton University gave such an offer he couldn't refuse. Free tuition for 4 years, free living expenses, free food, free books, a salary while you're going to school. Plus, every year, two round-trip tickets from Princeton, New Jersey, all the way to Cleveland to visit your parents. Two round-trip airplane tickets. So this is the reason he decided to go to Princeton University. And when he got to Princeton, Maharaj told me all these stories. He said, "Princeton in those days, in the late 1960s, was mostly the sons of wealthy Southern people. And they hated black people." So he said, to go to classes in Princeton, the only way he could survive, he had to wear his gun every day. When people started pushing him the wrong way, he would just show them the gun and they would leave him alone. But he excelled in his studies. He excelled and became very, very popular. He majored in psychology. He took international law. And he was the president of the student council. And he was the leader of the civil rights movement for that area. He was very much an activist. Gopal Prabhu told me that he went to Princeton University and looked up the yearbook of Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj's graduation year, and there was a picture of him, and they interviewed each person and asked what they hoped to do in the future. And he said that his object was global. He wanted to be a global humanitarian. That was always his heart. He got a graduation degree in psychology. And because he was so proficient, intelligent, creative, dynamic, he got a job for government office. I think it was a legal office. He was given opportunities for work in the United Nations. Here was a man that came from the most downtrodden situation, and now all opportunities were opening before his life for immense influence and material prosperity. Now, usually a person who's really born in poverty, when they have the opportunity for big, high positions in the world with a lot of wealth, they become quite attracted. But he was on a spiritual search. He was reading the scriptures. He met one particular guru, very famous guru who comes from India, who gave wonderful lectures, beautiful singer, personal associate with him. And he was studying and learning under other very, very respected spiritual leaders. And he accepted one person like his guru. But he was asking such deep questions. He wanted to know God. He wanted to love God. He wanted to do the greatest humanitarian work that a person could possibly do. And he had that conviction that God consciousness is the only real and true humanitarian work. He was asking such deep philosophical questions, and he wanted such a high level. He didn't want just artha, dhamma, kama, moksha, which practically everyone in the world is looking to God for. He wanted something more. So finally, after many months, his guru told him, he said, "What you want, I can't give you. You want something so high. You want something so deep. There's only one person in this world who can give you this. And that is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami of the Hare Krishna movement. But do not tell anybody I told you this." So he began to associate with the devotees at the temple in New York and studying Prabhupada's books. He became a devotee. On one occasion, he had the blessed opportunity
of meeting Srila Prabhupada.
Now please understand, at that time, he was one of the only African-American people in the Hare Krishna movement. And devotees didn't know how to deal with him, because he was a graduate of psychology from Princeton University, Ivy League school, and at the same time he's African-American. People were not treating him properly. He told me at the temple he was staying, only two or three people would even talk to him. Others ignored him. So he met Srila Prabhupada, and he very honestly revealed his heart to Srila Prabhupada. He said, "Srila Prabhupada, it hurts my heart to tell you this, but I must. There is racism and prejudice within your movement, amongst your devotees." Maharaj told me that the answer Prabhupada gave him transformed his life. Would you like to hear? Prabhupada could have apologized. He could have said, "No, that is not true." Prabhupada said to him, "If you are affected by what these ignorant devotees say and think, then what is the difference between you and them?" In other words, they're on the bodily conception of life, which is totally contrary to the most fundamental teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita teaches we are not this body, we are the eternal soul. A real Vaishnav sees the part and parcel of Krishna, the soul in every living being. One who judges another Vaishnav according to race, according to bodily designations, that person, according to the scriptures, has a mentality that lives in hell, naraka, buddhi. So if these people are in the bodily concept of life, if they are ignorant of the basic teachings of Lord Krishna, then they speak and act this way. But if you are affected by what they say, then you're also on the bodily concept of life. So what's the difference between you and them? Srila Prabhupada used that opportunity to just break through the barriers of mundane, superficial consciousness. And at that point, he just became so fearless, so confident. Confident that Srila Prabhupada's love and mercy was always with him. On a very auspicious day, he took vows before Srila Prabhupada at the initiation ceremony. And Srila Prabhupada gave him the name Ghanashyam Das. One of his first services was, because he was so highly educated, he was sent to Dallas, Texas, where there was a Gurukula, where he was the personal secretary of Satsvarup Goswami Maharaj. Prabhupada moved that Gurukula to Vrindavan, and Satsvarup Goswami Maharaj entered into the field of book distribution with his party. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he would go out in book distribution. In those days, they would do Harinam Sankirtan, and most everyone would distribute back to Godhead magazines. in the big cities of America. He would sell Prabhupada's big books. It was amazing. His infectious smile, his dynamic personality just charmed everyone's hearts. He would just go out and he was the biggest book distributor in their party. And when they would join this kirtan, he would dance in such an expert way, with so much grace and enthusiasm, that crowds of people would gather around in the streets of America just to see his dance. He actually amazed the American people. One of my dear godbrothers, Mahabodhi Prabhu, he told me some things about Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj which are very sacred and very pleasing to hear. Mahabodhi Prabhu was a graduate of San Diego State University, and he was in the SDS, which is a very radical student activist organization. He was in the student government, and he was revolting against the American government for various discrepancies in their policies. So he became a devotee around just after Ghanashyam Prabhu. And when they met, there was a deep bond between them because they were both college graduates and they were both social activists. And they both knew how to manipulate things in colleges to suit higher purposes. So they were thinking amongst each other, why don't we systematically preach in the colleges? After all, we were students, and we know what the students are like. So many of them are longing for higher answers to the problems of life. People are searching for something spiritual, but what are they getting? If we could give them the absolute truth according to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, it will transform their lives. And then they saw a letter by Srila Prabhupada. And in this letter, famous letter, Srila Prabhupada said that we must focus on preaching to the college students. Because one college student has the value of over 100 ordinary devotees to the expansion of our movement. So they decided this is really what they wanted to do. So Mahabodhi Prabhu and Ghanashyam Prabhu, they were going to the colleges and distributing books and having kirtans. And while distributing books and having kirtan, they would meet people and they would invite people in the evening for Satsarup Goswami Maharaj's lectures. Soon they were living in vans, just traveling from college town, distributing books, having kirtan, and having preaching programs. When Satsarup Goswami Maharaj was asked to join Prabhupada as his personal secretary for a month, but Ghanashyam Prabhu and Mahabodhi Prabhu opened a preaching center in a small house in the college town of San Antonio, Texas. And by the time Satsarup Goswami Maharaj came back, 1 month later, they had made 10 full-time devotees. And all of them were duly initiated by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, in 1 month. This was their in America. This was their enthusiasm. They met Hridayananda Goswami Maharaj and said, if you really want to do college preaching, go to Boston. So many colleges are there. So they went to Boston, and they started doing book distribution and Harinam and all types of other preaching there. And ultimately, they started another preaching center in Yale University, right across the street from the college. And in hardly a month, they made 10 full-time devotees from Yale University and that area. And Mahabodhi Prabhu told me that Ghanashyam, he had so much empathy, so much compassion. He personally took care of all these new devotees like their mother, their father, their best friend, their guide, their servant, their everything. And one feature he said that was very extraordinary is he just loved to serve. He was so enthusiastic to serve everyone. But there's one thing he could not tolerate, and that was anyone trying to serve him. Was very successful. Then one day, they got a phone call from India. It was Rameshwar Prabhu. He told Ghanashyam and Mahabodhi Prabhus that we have had a long talk with Srila Prabhupada. Satsarupa Goswami was also present. And Prabhupada wants to establish his books in the universities and in the libraries of the universities throughout all of America. And how he wants to do it? He wants to have a system of selling standing orders. At that time, there was only a few books out. But all the books that Prabhupada was intending to write and publish, they were going to sell those. He said, you should sell complete sets of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, and all other books to the colleges, professors, and libraries. Now at that time, Srimad Bhagavatam was only up to about the fourth canto, and Chaitanya Charitamrita hadn't even come out yet. They had to go to the colleges and universities with just a photocopy of the cover of Volume 1 of Chaitanya Charitamrita and convince them to buy, and every time a book is published, you will get it. And Rameshwar Prabhu said that Prabhupada has already named your party. He's named it the BBT Library Party, specially for selling complete sets of his books to the colleges and universities. Begin in America and then go all over the world. This was a bewildering instruction. But Mahabodhi Prabhu told me that Ghanashyam and him went out the first day. They had amazing success. And Ghanashyam, he would just pray so intensely to Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to empower him to serve his guru. He was always praying like this, an intense spirit of prayer. He simply wanted to serve and please his spiritual master. It was his one-pointed exclusive desire in life. He personified the Gita's teaching. Vyavashayatma ka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahusha ka hyanantasya budhayo vyavashayanam. Those who are on this path, Krishna says, they are resolute in purpose, their aim is one. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary of verse explains, one must make the order of the spiritual master one's life and soul. That was Srila Prabhupada's focus. Ghanashyam Prabhu saw that focus in his Guru Maharaj and took that same spirit within the core of his heart. He prayed. He was so unbelievable. He would take any type of risk. Nothing was impossible. He would go to colleges and meet professors in the most remote departments that had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness by any common person's perspective. And he would just charm those professors so much to buy entire sets of Prabhupada's books. It was unbelievable. Mahabodhi Prabhu came to the conclusion that this Ghanashyam Prabhu is a mystic. He believed that he had mystic cities. Because otherwise, how can you convince these types of people in the way he was doing? They began at Yale University, then the universities around Philadelphia, and they had so much success that Ghanashyam Prabhu, Mahabodhi Prabhu, Satsarup Goswami Maharaj decided they would sell sets of Prabhupada's books to every single college and university in the entire United States of America. And they were going from place to place. First they had a bus, then they broke up in vans, then so many other devotees joined the library party because they saw how much it was pleasing Prabhupada. I want to tell you something of the attributes of Ghanashyam Prabhu. He kept a diary. Every single day, without fail, he would write a message to Srila Prabhupada. He told me this, that he would just write a letter to Srila. He would just speak his heart completely honestly and openly to Srila Prabhupada every single day, praying for his help, praying for his guidance, praying for his mercy, explaining to him what he was doing, how he was doing. This was an integral part of his spiritual life. He was austerity personified. He ate once a day. And what did he eat? He would eat nothing but some fruit, some nuts, and sometimes he would mix a little sour cream with it. And he was traveling in a van with Mahabodhi Prabhu, who was not eating austere prasad. He was making all nice preparations. But he said the amazing thing is even though the party next to him was eating quite opulent foodstuffs, he never budged. He never touched anything except some fruit and nuts. It was basically what sadhus eat when they go to the forest. No matter what time they would take rest at night, he would arise earlier than 2 o'clock in the morning. He would chant at least 42 rounds every day. Sometimes, and they're living in a van, traveling from place to place. He would be out at the colleges before the colleges would open. And he would be just meeting people and preaching and distributing Prabhupada's books in this very, very systematic way until the last door of the college closed, usually about 10 at night. Then he would have his one meal a day. And oftentimes, if the other devotees in the van, little vans, when they woke up in the middle of the night, they would see Ghanashyam Prabhu with a flashlight, intensely studying Srila Prabhupada's books in a way not to disturb them. He was always chanting and always reading, even in the most difficult situations. And always eager to serve everyone. I will tell you one instant out of thousands and thousands. Would you like to hear?
No!
One day,
Ghanashyam Prabhu, Mahabodhi Prabhu, they drove to a small college.
The next day, they were supposed to go to a large college, which was many hours away in distance. When they got to this small college, it was deserted. There was no cars in the parking lot. There was no one walking around. Then they found out that the college was closed that day. It was some sort of holiday. So Mahabodhi said, well, let's get out of this place and let's go. Ghanashyam Prabhu said, no, let's try it. Krishna will empower us. Let's try it. Mahabodhi said, are you crazy? There's nobody here. All the offices are closed. The classrooms are closed. The whole college is closed. And they got in a big argument. And finally, Ghanashyam said, all right, but let me just go to the restroom. And I'll be back in 2 minutes. So Ghanashyam went into the college and asked someone where the restroom was. All the halls were deserted. There was just some caretakers. And he went to the restroom. 1 hour went by. 2 hours went by. Mahabodhi Prabhu told me he was very agitated. He's sitting in the car waiting for 2 hours when Ghanashyam Prabhu went to the toilet. Where is he? He was very much becoming disturbed. And then over 2 hours later, Ghanashyam Prabhu comes with his book bag around his shoulder over the hill, back to the car, opened the door. He was beaming, smiling ecstatically. Mahabodhi Prabhu was about to chastise him. Where were you? What is this? We were supposed to have gone 2 hours ago. But he decided, you know, this person is a mystic. I better hear what he has to say. I better hear what he has to say. He said, as per his word, he went to the toilet. And when he was in the restroom, he happened to see somebody. And he made friends with them. He just started talking to the person who's just... You know what people do in restrooms? This person was going to the toilet. And Ghanashyam is talking to him while he's going to the toilet. And he made friends with him, and the person liked him. And it ended up the person was a professor. He happened to be a professor of Eastern religion. And after talking to him, the professor brought him from the toilet to his office. He said, actually, I'm not supposed to teach today. I just happened to come because I wanted to catch up on some extra work. But I'm so happy to meet you. Ghanashyam charmed his heart. For his own personal purposes, he bought a standing order of all Prabhupada's books. And then he took Bhagavad Gita and decided that he would use this as the textbook for his class for the next year. And Ghanashyam Prabhu said, well, what about your library? Would they like a set of books too for your school library so all the students would have access? He said, well, the library is closed. He said, but the librarian is my friend. Let me call him at home. So he calls the librarian at home. The librarian's wife says, actually, he went to the library. He forgot something there. So he calls him at the library, and Ghanashyam Prabhu went to the library and just preached to the librarian. And within a few minutes, the librarian just was so won over by his qualities, by his compassion, by his enthusiasm, by his love, that the librarian bought an entire standing order of all Prabhupada's books for the university library. Mahabodhi Prabhu said, this is what he did at a small college that was closed. Mahabodhi Prabhu asked him, how did you do that? And Ghanashyam Prabhu said, while I was walking to to the toilet.
I was heavily praying to Guru and Krishna to give me some service at this college. To give me the chance to serve them by expanding the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because I made that prayer, miraculously, just the right people happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janamani janamanishwari bhavatad bhaktira hoita kitvai.
I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful women. I do not want name and fame. I do not want to be known as a great scholar. I do not even want liberation from suffering. My only intense prayer is that I may serve you unconditionally, birth after birth after birth after birth. This was Ghanashyam Prabhu's constant prayer. He simply wanted the opportunity to serve by helping Srila Prabhupada expand the Sankirtan movement. After they covered all colleges and universities of America, they went to Europe. Tremendous success. And then they ventured into the most dangerous region of Eastern Europe, which was at that time in the 1970s, the communist bloc. Under communist regime, the government outlawed any religion that did not comply to their state regulations. The KGB was a powerful organization of government agents that practically was spying and doing intelligence investigations on every man, woman, and child.
Ghanashyam Prabhu was risking his life
against all laws. He was smuggling books into the country. And then he was going to universities and colleges and other such libraries and institutions and convincing professors to buy books that were illegal. Very difficult. But yet such tremendous success.
Recently I talked to Gurudas Prabhu, who for some time was in Eastern Europe in some of those countries with Ghanashyam Prabhu. And he explained how they would be doing programs at people's houses that they would preach to, and the KGB would come and they'd have to run out the back door and escape. They were constantly hiding, so much tension, so much anxiety, so much pressure. Sometimes they would sneak into countries because they weren't allowed to be there. And then they had to sneak out because they weren't allowed to go out if they didn't have a stamp of their passport to come in. Otherwise, they'd be put in prison. This was the type of life he was living for Srila Prabhupada's service. And he was so unbelievably successful.
On one occasion, he was in a university. And he was just going down the halls, going to various professors, to librarians, trying to convince them to buy all Prabhupada's books. Now, when you're doing this service in that dangerous situation, you always are conscious of being watched. He took note that a very official-looking person was following him. Everywhere he went, every turn he made, this man was right behind.
behind him.
He came to the conclusion, this is an agent of the KGB. And if he's caught by him, it could be imprisonment, it could be death. He tried to blend in, but there was no possibility of him blending in because nobody else looked like him. He was obviously not a student. The man was trailing him everywhere he went. Finally, he realized, I'm going to be arrested. So all of a sudden, he just ran. He was a fast runner. He was running. And he heard the footsteps behind him running. He was running. The person was running, and he was running, and the person was running. And down the hallways of a college, it was a chase. He was all alone. He took a turn. The other man took a turn. He took another turn. And right, he understood. He had to somehow or other disappear from the scene. So he made one very sharp, fast turn and just immediately ran into the first door and closed it behind him before the other man turned. Shila Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj Ki. He turned a corner and opened the door and went in the door, and the KGB man just ran past. But when he walked in this door, there was a very dignified official person sitting behind the desk of a small room. This man was very seriously startled. All of a sudden, this African American man just runs into his room, and he looked at him and said, who are you, and what are you doing here? KGB was somewhere right outside, searching everywhere. He said, he happened to read the name on the door before he went in. He said, you are Professor so-and-so? He said, yes. He said, oh, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I have an appointment to meet you at this time. He said, I'm not aware of any appointment. He said, no, I made an appointment. I came all this way to this just to meet you. I didn't want to break my appointment. He said, I have no recollection of making an appointment. He said, I made an appointment with your secretary. She didn't tell you? He said, no. He said, well, I'm here, and I'd like to discuss some things with you. And he told the person all about Srila Prabhupada's books and how important they would be for him to have in the university library and in his own personal classes. And by the time discussion ended, that professor bought an entire standing order of all Srila Prabhupada's books. This is a story about how when a great devotee has such a deep prayer and commitment to serve his spiritual master and Krishna, how Krishna makes extraordinary and sometimes miraculous arrangements to fulfill that desire for devotional service. Krishna is the supreme creator of all the cosmic manifestation.
What is it that he cannot do?
And when a devotee with a pure heart wants to be the puppet of his Guru Maharaj, the instrument of the compassion of Krishna, Krishna can make wonderful arrangements to just mystically put us in the right place at the right time with the right person to fulfill our desire.
He sent reports to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was simply amazed.
On receiving one report, Prabhupada was just shaking his head and smiling in great pleasure. He said that this devotee is amazingly empowered, this Ghanasham. In these communist countries, he was probably the only black person in the entire country. It's not that he could just blend in, look like everybody else. African people weren't even allowed in those countries in most cases. He was the only African person in the countries, and he stood out. And he's just enthusiastically, he's going through forests and climbing mountains and going to monasteries and meeting people and selling Prabhupada's entire book sets. And these reports gave so much pleasure to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada profusely blessed him, was so grateful to him. He was an inspiration for devotees all over the world. So determined against all odds, taking all risks, and he did it blissfully. Soon he was the biggest book distributor. He was getting world acclaim. People were really inspired by his austerity, by his sadhana, by his preaching, by his service. I was living on a mountain in New Vrindavan in those days. I didn't even know who the President of the United States was in those days, but I heard of Ghanasham Prabhu's devotional service. So isolated. But still, he was like the sun. His devotional service was like a sun illuminating all directions. While I was with him in the month of May of this year, he told me one story that was very transformational in his life and his service to Srila Prabhupada. In 1976, he was in Mayapur for the Gaur Purnima festival. And most all the members of the library party in Eastern Europe were also there with him. It came to his attention that the other members of the library party were considering resigning because Ghanasham Prabhu was just putting too much pressure on them. His standards were so high. He was so austere, practically no sleep, practically no eating, just long, long hours of enthusiastically serving without expecting anything in return. It was practically beyond human. So they were just talking, we can't cope with it. The pressure, because he's expecting us to be like that also. And he was a leader. He told me when he got that information, his heart was broken. He was so much in the whirlwind of devotional service, he didn't consider how it was affecting the others. He had no idea that it was affecting them in this way. He felt so crushed,
so bad.
And he prayed to Srila Prabhupada and thought very deeply and came to the conclusion that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings is to be Gopi Bhartur Bhadakama Layora Das 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 Anu Das. The servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And the greatest service we can do is encourage others. To discourage others is a disservice. So he decided that better than my own results, which Prabhupada is praising me and so many people are praising me, more important than my own results is to encourage others to get big results. To encourage others in their devotional service. And at that point in Sri Mayapur, India, in 1976, he resolved in his mind that his primary service to Srila Prabhupada is in inspiring and encouraging devotees as a selfless servant of the servant of the servant.